I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
I think there's a real brokenness in the system right now that has been discovered.
An alarming investigation finds that organs were taken from patients who were still alive. The changes the leader of a federal agency is now implementing.
And I think having that messaging, having the compassion, the love, the respect was so important as we move forward into the next step. Because certainly this is a new chapter.
3 years post-Dobbs, the attorney general who helped overturn Roe v. Wade shares the pro-life victories her state has seen since the historic Dobbs decision and weighs in on what is needed next.
There was a miracle of hope that happened inside of the cell that he was able to bring to these men, and that in some ways he had something to teach me about suffering and about hope.
The life and sacrifice of St. Maximilian Kolbe will hit theaters soon. We speak with the director of this new Catholic movie. A systemic disregard for the sanctity of life. An alarming investigation finds that more than two dozen patients may have been alive when the organ removal process began. That's according to a press release by the Department of Health and Human Services. The department discovered that hospitals allowed the organ procurement process to begin when patients still showed signs of life. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. calls the findings, quote, horrifying. The investigation looked at 351 cases over a three-month period from December 2024 to February 2025. It found that some 30% of cases had concerning features, including 73 patients with neurological signs incompatible with the threshold needed for organ donation. And at least 28 patients may have still been alive when the organ removal process began.
What needs to happen is to have a really strong determination of death before any kind of vital organ donation process is initiated. There's a lot of pressure to obtain as many organs as possible, and therefore there's a tendency to cut corners. There's also a tendency from the organizations that do the organ donations to have a kind of, you know, pressure to say, wow, you know, in doubt, we're going to not go with the safe choice, but rather to the organ choice. And so there's a real brokenness in the system right now that has been discovered.
RFK has announced a major initiative to start reforming the organ transplant system, including mandatory neurological assessments every 12 hours for patients who might become organ donors, assessing if the patient has cleared any illicit psychoactive drugs from their system, allowing for any staff to stop the donation process if patient safety concerns arise, and reporting to regulators any time organ donation is paused due to safety concerns. On the international front, several countries in Western Europe have released updated abortion data, and unfortunately, it is not good news for the pro-life movement. In Ireland, nearly 11,000 abortions were performed in 2024, about an 8% increase from the previous year. England and Wales also saw a rise in the number of legal abortions. Their most recent reports only reflect data from 2021 and 2022. These countries saw an increase in the deadly procedure by more than 13%.
One thing we know from a lot of research is that abortion rates are impacted by public policy. And tragically, Ireland legalized abortion in 2019, and it's kind of not surprising that since then, abortions have gone up by about 40% in Ireland. We know we legalized abortion, numbers go up. In England and Wales, they made chemical abortions a lot more accessible. During the COVID-19 pandemic, they allowed women to get these chemical abortion drugs without any in-person visits. So it's really not surprising that abortions went up by about 13% in 2022. You make chemical abortions easier to get. Again, abortion rates go up.
This week, the Journal of the American Medical Association released a new study on telehealth abortion. The authors unfortunately found that despite strong pro-life laws, telehealth abortion rates were 7 times higher in pro-life states than in states with permissive abortion laws. The landscape of abortion has changed significantly after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch helped bring the Dobbs case to the Supreme Court for that historic win. I had the opportunity to speak with her about her continuing work on the pro-life front. She shared the initiatives supporting mothers and children in her state and also weighed in on the move to defund Planned Parenthood. Take a look. We are now celebrating the third anniversary of your historic win at the Supreme Court, which overturned Roe v. Wade. Are you seeing what you hope to see across the nation as states take control of the abortion issue? And what, in short, what is your reaction 3 years post-Dobbs?
Well, it's hard to believe it's been 3 years. I mean, what a true God case for the Mississippi Dobbs case to move forward. And we truly asked the question, overturn Roe v. Wade. But we did it certainly on the premise that we all know, empower women and promote life, that you can do them together. And I think having that messaging, having the compassion, the love, the respect was so important as we move forward into the next step, because certainly this is a new chapter. We were able to now write it. And so in Mississippi, I created the Empowerment Project. And we have taken that to the legislature. They've already passed 12 of our proposals, given us an opportunity to do so many things for women and children to really uplift them, empower them for their next part, their next steps in their journey. We've done everything from new baby boxes. We have 6 in the state of Mississippi. We've had our first baby. We were able to get Foster Parents Bill of Rights passed. We've worked on tax credits for adoption and child care. So it's just been a number of things that have been so important to do. Even this year, we moved and we said, you know what, we need paid maternity leave for our women in state government. And it passed.
That's incredible. And would it be your recommendation to states to have these programs kind of on the wings waiting when they pass pro-life legislation?
Oh, absolutely. I think every additive that you can have for these young mothers, these children, be ready. And we should be helping them across the board, but this should inspire us even more. You know, for us, we look at particularly the adoption and the foster care system, and we are very engaged in making that a very strong opportunity to get those children into forever homes. And that's been very key for us in the state as well. So anytime you can make those preparations and help those children and help those mothers.
That's incredible. Now, the budget reconciliation bill aims to defund Planned Parenthood for 1 year. It took years to get to this point. Does this provide opportunities for attorneys general or governors in other states to bring real health care to women?
Well, and that's absolutely what we should be addressing is the health care for the women. Those dollars should be always spent on, again, how do we provide the best health care for the women in our respective states? In Mississippi, we already had a moratorium. The monies for Planned Parenthood could not be used in any way that was not for health care, specifically for women. So I think this is an incredible move, and I think you'll see all of us in our states really focus on how we help women, and we really do identify their needs in the healthcare space and what we can do for them moving forward.
Well, Madam Attorney General, just thank you for leading the charge and empowering these women and making sure these children have safe homes.
Well, thank you so much. It was just an honor of a lifetime for myself and for my team to represent and have this outcome for overturning Roe v. Wade by the Mississippi Dobbs case.
Mark your calendars. The March for Life announced next year's National March will take place on Friday, January 23rd, 2026. The march brings tens of thousands to our nation's capital every year in the largest public witness to life in the nation. The special day includes a rally with speeches by prominent pro-life leaders and a march around Capitol Hill. Join us on EWTN for complete coverage of the March for Life. We will bring you on-the-ground reports and provide in-depth analysis from pro-life experts throughout the day. Be sure to tune in. On Thursday, August 14th, we celebrate the feast day of St. Maximilian Kolbe, one of the pro-life movement's patron saints. Kolbe was a Polish priest, writer, and a Catholic friar. During World War II, St. Maximilian Kolbe was arrested and sent to the Auschwitz concentration camp for sheltering Jewish refugees from the Nazi regime. He selflessly offered to take the place of a family man condemned to die at the camp. The Catholic friar and 9 other men were sentenced to death by starvation in an underground bunker. Deprived of food and water, Kolbe and 3 other prisoners miraculously survived for 2 weeks before being executed by lethal injection. In 1982, Pope John Paul II canonized St. Maximilian Kolbe as the first martyr of charity.
Love is the realest thing. No one can take that from us, even now.
Triumph of the Heart tells the story of the indomitable human spirit and its ability to withstand deep suffering, and when united to Christ, bear great fruit even amidst deep darkness. In the film, Kolbe accompanies these 9 condemned men in the darkest hours of their lives and fights to build a brotherhood of hope amidst their suffering and despair. I had the pleasure of speaking with the director of Triumph of the Heart, Anthony D'Ambrosio, who shared what inspired him to make this movie. Anthony, thank you so much for being here with us today. So tell us, what inspired you to make this movie?
Well, it's a long question and a long answer to it, but I went through a time of great suffering in my life, and I had a crisis of faith, and in the midst of that crisis of faith, I was really asking a pretty pivotal question, which was, what is the point of living in the midst of suffering? Is there a reason to suffer? Is there a reason to live? And having grown up Catholic and having kind of lost my faith, I was really struggling with that. And I found a detail about Kolbe's story that really struck me. I had heard many times about his sacrifice. I'd known that he was somebody that had stayed alive for 14 days and was executed in the starvation bunker that, in many ways, the Germans lost because they couldn't kind of stop his or quench his indomitable spirit. But what I did not know was that he had brought 4 other men in that starvation bunker to the point of execution with him, that there was sort of this brotherhood that happened inside of that cell. And I knew immediately as I understood that detail that there was a miracle of hope that happened inside of the cell that he was able to bring to these men, and that in some ways he had something to teach me about suffering and about hope.
That's really beautiful. And now you mentioned that in this time where he has this brotherhood, a lot of this film takes part in like a hidden part of Maximilian Kolbe's life. I imagine it took a lot of prayer and reflection in using your imagination in the Ignatian sense. Mm. What message do you think Maximilian Kolbe has for people today?
I think that we're living in the midst of a crisis of hope. And all of the butterfly effects that we see in terms of the culture of death, all of the trigger issues of the culture of abortion and of assisted suicide, all of these actually kind of stem from, I would say, a crisis of hope. Mm-hmm. And what I think that Maximilian Kolbe's life ultimately was about, and his death ultimately was about, was answering this question in the face of complete destruction of hope. You know, the Nazis at this time were almost unbeatable. Nobody could see any chink in their armor. They had totally destroyed Kolbe's life's work. He was sort of like the Bishop Barron of his age, had one of the biggest media syndicates, the first really big media syndicate in the Catholic space. And ultimately, what really resounds was this moment of decision for him to love in the midst of that suffering and to hope in the midst of that suffering and to bring that to his fellow inmates. And I think that the message of his life, the message that sort of I was meditating on that I needed, is also a message for our particular culture right now. I think there's no sort of question that JP2, as a Polish saint himself, was in his meditations very deeply moved by and influenced by this story of Maximilian Kolbe's life. A theology of the body, in many ways, sort of was meditated on right next to Kolbe's death. And so I think that right now, while we're trying to sort of bring forward the pro-life cause, we need stories of heroes that really show why life is valuable, even in these moments where it seems like totally meaningless. And that's really what the story is about and what the movie is kind of presenting.
Amen. And can you tell us a little bit about the approach you decided to take with this film? You spared no expense. Mm. Why was that?
I think that there's this classic trope that Christian or Catholic media is saturated, it's cheesy, it's poorly produced, on one hand. And then there's this other frustration that it's inauthentic or not particularly loyal to the actual story or the actual saint, and trying to put sort of a political agenda from the 21st century into that person's mouth. And I think that our approach in flying out to Poland and doing this in many ways as missionaries of hope, it really felt like we were part of Kolbe's militia and trying to tell his story, you know. And I think that the craftsmanship that we're approaching, the willingness to go to the depths of that story, it's very gritty, it's very dark, it's very human and intense, and shows a version of Kolbe that I think many people will be like completely blown away by and shocked by and moved by, but in many ways also sort of like it's a gut punch. It's like Passion of the Christ. But I think that comes and flows out of the Catholic imagination. Mm-hmm. As Catholic artists, throughout history, we've been the ones that have been willing to present the cross, right? The crucifix, not just the empty cross, but the cross with Christ suffering and his body on the cross, looking at that darkness and saying, here in this place, in this like most dark and difficult and ugly thing, the resurrection and the seed of divinity is buried. And I think that our approach to doing it with the finest level of craftsmanship, the finest level of willingness to of courage, I guess, mm-hmm. I think that really comes and stems from just being formed by the Catholic tradition of iconography and art and storytelling and wanting to do that justice.
That's very beautifully said, and I can't wait to watch the film. Mm. So tell us, how can our viewers watch Triumph of the Heart?
Well, it will be coming out in theaters in September on the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary, September 12th. So go to your local theater, your local AMC or whatever. Just find us on Google and search for us, and you'll find screenings in your area. If you'd like to make sure that it comes to your city, you can buy out a theater or volunteer to host a screening. So you can find more about that on our website at triumphoftheheart.com.
Wonderful. Thank you for being with us today, Anthony.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
From St. Kolbe to St. Augustine, the election of Pope Leo has sparked renewed interest in the Augustinian order. Who are the Augustinians? And their namesake, St. Augustine of Hippo. Reporter Julia Convery has more on their founder and his pro-life legacy.
La vostra presenza oggi è per me.
No one is exempted from striving to ensure respect for the dignity of every person, especially the most frail and vulnerable, from the unborn to the elderly.
E ogni singola persona di questa terra.
Pope Leo XIV's words to the diplomatic corps, defending life in the early days of his pontificate, an Augustinian friar turned pope, whose defense of life doesn't just come from leading the Catholic Church, but also has its roots in his Augustinian order. Augustinians follow the rule of St. Augustine, a rule written by St. Augustine of Hippo, a bishop and doctor of the Church. His writings fought various heresies in the early days of the Church and included a defense of the dignity of life.
Augustine himself was opposed to abortion for a number of different reasons. The first, it was such an egregious violation of the dignity of the human person, of the most vulnerable, of the weakest. But also its devastating impact on marriage, on the unitive and procreative aspects of the marriage, of the fruits of marriage itself. And so from that standpoint, he stands as one of the great champions in the ancient world for the sanctity of life and the defense of life.
What is lesser known about this father of the Church is that he also was a biological father, raising a son and eventually converting to Christianity with him. The rule of St. Augustine also included an emphasis on serving the common good, devoting oneself to one's community with love. This rule has carried through the early stages of the Church to the present day, the most recent display of the Augustinian defense of life seen in Pope Leo XIV, who previously served as the prior general of the Augustinians. His brother Augustinians are a registered nonprofit with the United Nations, running programs internationally that serve the underprivileged, a few run in the United States. John Green is the executive director of the Augustinian Defenders of the Rights of the Poor, or ADROP, which serves hundreds in the community of Philadelphia. Whether it be healthcare clinics, English classes, or criminal justice reform, He says protecting human dignity is at the heart of what they do.
Being able to create spaces where people feel cared for and loved and supported and served, whether or not their beliefs are mine or yours, we want everyone to have the best life that they can under the umbrella of the God that loves them.
Meanwhile, just across the border with Mexico, another ministry of Augustinians serves orphans, affirming life by offering children a loving place to call home.
It's an expression of the love for the love of God individually, but also communally. We support each other. We work together to build the kingdom, to build the city of God, if you will, in caring for the most vulnerable among us.
Hogar Infantil serves about 30 children at a time, providing for their needs until they are adopted or reunited with their families. Augustinian-run schools in the U.S. support both the orphanage and ADROP, raising funds or volunteering their time, affirming life across borders and generations. Pope Leo places the work of the Augustinians on a world stage, which begs the question, how will his Augustinian heart come to light in his papacy?
The Augustinians, throughout the long history of the Augustinian tradition, have served the poor with such enthusiasm and such deep care. And it's certainly something that Pope Leo XIV has demonstrated throughout his life as a missionary in Peru, as the head of the Augustinians in promoting the pro-life cause in all possible ways.
But I do think that there's going to be this encouragement of him for us to listen to each other, to respect each other, to respect each other's dignity, and to act out of that deep respect and that deep listening to each other.
Julia Convery, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Coming up, celebrating the founding of the Eternal Word Television Network, we take a look back at how it all started and dive into the pro-life legacy of Mother Angelica. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This week marks the anniversary of EWTN's on-air launch. 44 years ago, Mother Angelica had a vision for creating a Catholic television network. What started as a simple garage renovation turned into the birthplace of EWTN's first studio. Through God's grace, a lot of grit, and generous donations, Mother Angelica built EWTN from the ground up into the largest Catholic television network in the world. Over the years, it has grown steadily, now reaching more than 435 million television households in over 160 countries around the world. I am so honored to be part of this growing organization and to help share God's message with our viewers. Mother Angelica advocated for life on and off the screen. We want to take a moment to honor her wisdom and the powerful warnings she shared about the sanctity of life.
It's a teaching of the Lord that God alone gives life and God alone takes life. And when we begin to manipulate, then we can be sure we endanger our soul and the soul of others. So I think we need to understand nobody has a choice over life or death except God. Now the pill, oh wow, aren't we smart, huh? Now we not only kill the baby, we're under the risk of killing the mother. But does anyone care? Well, I heard the other day we have too much population. You've already killed millions and millions and millions and millions of children. You got too much population, you're kidding yourself. Another 10 years would just be a lot of old people looking at each other. And you're too old to reproduce. The culture of death is hard, unbending. It is without love, without compassion, without hope. It's the blackest pit. There's nothing. Nothing. But darkness. And you say, well, why are you talking so much about life? Because I want other people to live.
Thank you, Mother Angelica, for your lasting legacy. On Sunday, thousands of people in India took part in a March for Life. This is the fourth official year that a March for Life has been held. In the city of Bangalore, participants held signs supporting life and calling out the evils of euthanasia. The Catholic-led event also included religious leaders from the Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, and Parsi communities. Depending on the circumstances, abortion is legal up to 24 weeks in India. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.